Welcome to Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, a weekly interactive program on some of the most controversial breaking issues of today. Here now is your host, David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group, and author of Headlines.
Goedvach, everybody. Welcome to Headlines. This week we will have her of Daniel Landa, who is Rosh Yeshiva Orach Chaim for the last 25 years. He received his smicha from Rabbi Yosher Beres Soloveitchik. He is also the Chancellor of Turo. He wears many hats. We'll be discussing electronic eyes on cameras, lights, etc. on Shabbos. Afterwards, on the second part of the program, we'll be discussing a current news topic, 70 years since the liberation of Auschwitz. Were the people killed by the Nazis considered Kedoshim? Or is a Kedosh only somebody who was given a choice, as the Rambam defines it? Clearly, this is a very sensitive topic. You can send your questions in by email to questions@headlinesbook.com or call 1-844-4-HEADLINES. Next week's topic will be Chinuch of our children, the respective role of parents and yeshivas. Is it a joint effort? Is it separate but equal? Or sole responsibility of the parents? The following week we will have Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. The topic will again be a sensitive topic, alternative lifestyles and halacha. Welcome, Rav Landa. It's an honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Rav David.
So, there are security cameras all over the place. According to one source, there are over 100,000 security cameras on New York City streets. London purportedly has over 500,000 cameras. So, should we stay in our homes all Shabbos? What's the solution?
David, this is a very pertinent topic. As you said, today sensors are everywhere. They have become truly a common feature of contemporary life. Surveillance cameras are not just used in office buildings. They are becoming more and more common for homeowners concerned about security. A person walking down the street may not even be aware that he is passing a camera that will capture his image. So how do we deal with this? Is it permissible on Shabbos to pass by a surveillance camera? The answer is a little complicated, so let's look at exactly which malachas are involved. Bone and Avara are the two malachas most commonly associated with electricity. From that standpoint, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach maintains that there is no concern here, since walking in front of a camera does not complete a circuit. True, one does in fact trigger a change in voltage by passing the camera, but that per se is not considered a violation of either Bone or Avara according to Shlomo Zalman. The shaila of surveillance cameras and closed circuit TV, however, primarily touches upon the malacha of ksiva. We ordinarily think of ksiva in terms of writing of letters. After all, the Mishnah in Shabbos states, HaKosev Shtei Osios Chayev. One who writes two letters is guilty of violating the Shabbos. But the Rambam in the 11th Perek of Hilchos Shabbos is quite clear. Painting is also included in the malacha of ksiva. So when one comes into the range of the cameras, he is in effect painting his image on the screen of the monitor. So the question is whether this constitutes a violation of ksiva. Some have suggested that since walking in front of a camera is a very unusual method of ksiva, this kind of painting, so to speak, should be considered as kalach yad. It's like a righty writing with his left hand. But not everyone agrees with that. The counter-argument is that kalach yad should not be defined in a vacuum, rather should be measured against the usual way of producing the intended outcome. For example, if the ordinary way of sewing is to operate a sewing machine with one's feet, then indeed such an act is included in the malach of Tefira Midaraisa. In our case, the usual way to capture an image on the screen is to st- step in front of the camera. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein paskin that this form of ksiva is only midrabanon because the image is only temporary. Seksav she'ino miskayim. There is no durability to this ksiva. The continuity of the image depends upon the individual staying in front of the camera. Once he leaves the optical field and walks away, the image disappears. Why is this point important? What practical difference does it make if it's ksiva midrabanan or midaraisa? At the end of the day, it is still prohibited. The answer is central to many of the discussions which we will have tonight. There is a concept in halacha, as I'm sure your listeners understand and recognize, of psik ratio. When you are performing a permissible act, but there is a consequence of Chilul Shabbos. And then there is a psik ratio de lo nechale. When the consequence of Chilul Shabbos provides no benefit to the one who is performing that act. A psik ratio de lo nechale is considered by many poskim to be permitted if it is coupled with a malacha drabanan.
So based on that, Reb Daniel, based on that, would you be able to do it in your own home as well? Many people have security cameras for, walking around at the outside of the house to watch their children, to watch the backyard, to see who's at the front door. If it's a drabanan and it's a psik ratio d'loy nichalei for the person who's being watched, would that allow you to keep your monitor on and monitor your front door?
That's an excellent question, and poskim have discussed it. It really boils down to whether or not the camera is important to you. You own the camera because you want to see the other people outside. The homeowner did not buy the equipment to take pictures of himself. But on the other hand, he does want it to work properly so that other people will be photographed. So the question is, as you hinted, how do you define psik ratio de lo nechale? And basically, this is a dispute between Rav Nissim Karolis and Rav Moshe Sternberg. According to Rav Karolis, since the owner is only interested in capturing other people's images, he is permitted to step in front of the camera. He doesn't mind if the camera skips his image. So as far as he's concerned, it is a psik ratio lo nechale. Now, Sternberg takes the position that there is no difference whose picture it is. Either the system works or it doesn't. Cameras are not selective. If the owner wants it to work at all, then it is considered to be psik ratio lo nechale. So according to Rav Sternberg, regarding the question you just asked, the answer would be that it would be prohibited for the owner, given the metric of psik ratio de lo nechale, to step in front of the camera.
But if somebody else steps in front of the camera, would he be allowed to watch the monitor?
Well, there is no issur per se in watching the monitor. The issur is placing the monitor or stepping in front of the monitor. Watching per se does not constitute a violation.
So, for example, a homeowner then would be allowed to keep his system on Shabbos and watch other people, according to everybody, if he himself was careful not to step in front of the camera.
Well, there is a, of course, the use of the Shabbos. This is certainly not in the spirit of Shabbos. But in terms of actual rabbinic or biblical prohibitions, besides Zilusa de Shabbos, there would be no issue.
But would it be Zilusa de Shabbos if he's doing it for security reasons?
Well, if there is a tzorach, then that would override the Zilusa de Shabbos, correct.
So what about motion sensors?
By the way, this is what you mentioned. This is why many poskim have permitted the use of surveillance cameras in Yerushalayim and around the coastal Maravi. Precisely because of the issue of security that overrides any Zilus of the Shabbos consideration.
Mm-hmm. What about when listening to Rav Daniel Lander, the Rosh Yeshiva, Baruch Haim, Rabbi Lander, what about motion sensors that trigger lights on the streets?
That too has become increasingly commonplace. Many people have placed the motion detectors outside their home as a matter of security in order to provide illumination when they walk home. And many people are confronted with the fact that an innocent act of, like walking home from Shul Friday night, may indeed trigger the turning on lights. To understand the answer to your question, we first should look into how motion detectors work. The device shoots out an ultrasound beam. The pedestrian walking in front of the motion detector breaks that beam. And the sensor, when it detects that change, trips a switch to turn on the lights. At first blush, this seems pretty obvious. Walking near the motion detector seems to directly and immediately cause the lights to go on. You wouldn't call it a grumma. It's really tantamount to flipping a switch on in your house. The case is different than, say, opening a refrigerator door. There are poskim who, in fact, prohibit opening a refrigerator door when the motor is off, because opening the door brings in warm air and causes a compressor to be activated. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is matir, based on the leniency of grumma. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman, since there are several steps as well as a time lag that separates the opening of the door and from the activation of the compressor, halachically speaking, there is only an indirect relationship between these two events. The Ramah prohibits grumma, except when there is a hefsid involved. But Rav Shlomo Zalman argues that when grumma consequence is unintentional, then it's permitted even midrabanan. In our situation, a motion detector is unlike the refrigerator case. We are not dealing with several steps, nor is there a time delay. As soon as you break that beam, the lights go on. So we really cannot rely on the grumma leniency in the case of motion detectors. But there's much more to this. First, we have to examine whether we're dealing with a melacha d'oraisa or a melacha d'rabbanan. The consensus of poskim is that the old-fashioned lighting, the incandescent bulbs that contain a glowing filament, involves havara midaraisa. Other forms of illumination, like the LED bulbs or fluorescent, is only havara midrabbanan. This is not universally accepted, but this is a consensus of the poskim today. So if the outdoor light that goes on is an incandescent bulb, one must be very vigilant not to walk in that path of the motion detector. Because as I said before, psik resh de lo nechale would not be able to allow a melacha d'oraisa. But if the fluorescent or LED bulb is being used, then we can rely on the fact that A, triggering lights is unintentional, and B, provides no benefit. In other words, it's a psik resh lo nechale on a melacha d'rabbanan, and according to many opinions, this would be permitted. But your listeners should be aware there's one very important caveat here. If you are walking on a dark street and the light that just went on provides, in fact, a benefit to you, this cannot be considered a psik resh lo nechale. In that case, walking even in front of an LED light would be prohibited on Shabbos. I also want to mention a very interesting opinion of Shmuel Vosner, printed in the Les Chelek of his Tshuvas, that your listeners should be aware of. According to Rav Ozner, since walking in his customary manner, he doesn't give any thought of turning on his lights. He's not considered from a halachic standpoint to have performed the act of turning on lights. In the language of Chazal, he is a misasek. It's different than psik resha. There we are dealing with a permitted act that inherently includes an act of Chilul Shabbos. But in our situation, ordinary walking does not involve turning on lights. So even when these two actions collide, we don't connect the fellow walking down the street to the Chilul Shabbos consequence. If you think about it, it's really a far-reaching svara that has a whole range of implications, including the answer to your first question about walking in front of a surveillance camera. But, and this is important to remember...
So this would help for an incandescent light as well, then?
Correct. But Rav Ozzi also would limit his psak to situations that are not nechalei. So if you're walking down a dark street in Muncie and there is no streetlights, so even Rav Ozzi's psak would not be allowed, would not allow someone to make that route past a motion detector.
Let me ask you a question, Rabbi Landa. We're talking to the Rosh Hashiva, Rav Landa. There's a famous Rajba in Shabbos that says that if a deer runs into a house and the homeowner shuts the door because he wants the deer, but he also wants to be shomer his house, it's not considered a malacha because you look at the main intent, which was to guard his house. Could we use that svara to say that somebody is walking down the street, he's really more interested in walking down the street and turning on lights, and to use that as a sniff to be mater?
Precisely. That's what Rav Ozner does quote in his tshuva.
There is
a machlokas between the Rashba and the Ran regarding this point. When one locks a door to his house and there is a deer, and his interest is to guard the contents of the house but not the deer per se, the Rashba does not consider this to be a violation of the Malach of Seida. The Ran disagrees. The Mogen Avraham is posek that we should not rely on the Rashba, but Rav Ozner maintains that even the Ran would concede to the Rashba that in our case, when you pass motion detectors and you are simply performing an act of walking, which is your customary way of traveling from one place to another, that there is no hint involved in the act of walking with respect to turning on lights, that this is considered to be misase.
So I have a question here, Rabbi Linda, from Shimon from Flatbush emailed me a question. It says, in your own home, would you be allowed to put lights for security reasons and tell the members of your home to walk through a door that does not have lights so that they are not using the motion sensors, but everybody else's?
Well, again, if you are providing light outside your home and there is no street light, then you are involving others potentially in an act of Chilul Shabbos because they will receive benefit. And for them, it will be a psikresha de nechalei.
But according to Rav Ozner, it would be fine in this case.
No, even according to Rav Ozner, one is permitted only in a case where you do not derive any benefit. Rav Ozner is very careful that when there is nechalei, when there is benefit that is accrued by the passerby, then it would be prohibited even according to his svara. Mind you that the Rashba
is talking about where it is
now when you do not have intent to capture the deer.
Rajba says if you have kavana for both, it's okay. As long as you have kavana also to close the door, but you cannot solely have kavana for the deer, but as long as you have kavana for both, you would be okay.
Well, Rajba says that if it's nichalei,
then it would be problematic.
Then it would be problematic. So therefore, if you live in a well-lit street, then you can place a motion detector with an LED bulb. But if you live in a street where there is no outdoor lighting, then one would be prohibited from placing this motion detector on Shabbos.
Rabbi Linda, what would you say to the following svara? All the malachas of Shabbos is where you are doing something. Where, however, you are doing something and somebody else is causing the malacha to happen to you, there is, in all of Hilchos Shabbos, we don't find something like that to be usser. So here, even if it is nichalei, I am walking, and you are the one who is putting a beam on me. So we don't have an example of this duality in all Hilchos Shabbos where, in effect, you are causing me to do a malacha. And as such, is it possible to say that this would not be a malacha on Shabbos?
This touches on a very basic principle in Hilchos Shabbos. And that is Melechas Machshavas. guidelines for what constitutes a malacha on Shabbos do not conform necessarily to what the guidelines that apply the Kol HaTorah Kulo. And this is rooted in the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Samach, where the Gemara tells us that if one throws grain in the air and the wind is instrumental in separating the chaff from the grain, that whereas B'chol HaTorah Kulo this would be only grama, on Shabbos it would be prohibited because Melechas Machsheves Asra Torah. Whenever one does a malacha, even if there is other involvement, nevertheless, if your machshava, if your intent is fulfilled, and that intent involves an act of Chil Shabbos, one is liable for violating Shabbos. And this is a Gemara that Rav Chaim Ozer, in his famous tshuva that prohibited the use of electricity, used to reject the claim that electricity is only grama and therefore should not be included in the Issa Shabbos. Rav Chaim Ozer cited this Gemara and said, no. Since the malacha is fulfilling your machshava, we don't consider this to be grama. So therefore, returning to our case, walking down the street, you are passing by, you are causing the light to go on. It does provide benefit to you. It is nichale. And therefore, we cannot consider this to be grama. Rather, it comes under the rubric of a melechas machsheves asra Torah, and it would be prohibited on Shabbos unless it is a psikresha d'lo nechle, unless there is already street illumination and you do not receive any benefit per se from the motion detector.
We're listening to the Rosh Yeshiva of Aruch Chaim, Rav Daniel Landa. You can email your questions to questions@headlinesbook.com or call them in to 1-844-4-HEADLINES. Rav Landa, I have a question here from Yaina from Baltimore. What about sinks or toilets that are activated by motion detectors? He says his Rav said you have to be very careful. You don't want to get stuck in the bathroom on Shabbos.
Today, you go to a hotel or a hospital, the bathrooms are manipulated with electric eyes, and the shaila is a very, very severe shaila. Let me tell you what Rav Belsky paskened. Rav Belsky maintains that we find in the Gemara Ervin and Daf Mem Aleph, where one is permitted to leave the tchum in order to take care of his biological needs, and covered up rias allows us to be exempt from what ordinarily would be also midrabanan. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that similarly applies the concept and the principle of covered up rias to waive the issur of muksa. So Rav Belsky maintains that if one goes to a bathroom and there is no other bathroom nor the restroom available, then one is permitted to use a bathroom because we're dealing with a nisa drabanan. There is no havara midaraisa, there is no glowing filament, and kovet habrios is matir the issa drabanan. However, Rabelsky was careful to add that this psak would not apply to using a sink because then it's not an issue of kovet habrios, and therefore one should be vigilant not to use a sink in which there is an electric eye.
So I have a question here. David from Teaneck sent in a question. If you use a hotel room that uses motion sensors to monitor air conditioning, heat, etc., what should one do?
This is a question that also has become a very commonplace today. Here we're dealing with several other issues that may allow for leniency. There is a concept in halacha of suffik psikresha, where one is unaware of what causation he will precipitate. He doesn't know if he walks into the room whether the thermostat will be affected, whether there will be a change in the air conditioning or the heat. It has to reach a certain point for the air conditioning or the heat to kick in. So therefore, the Taz and the Mishavura embraces the opinion of the Taz, is that a Sofik Psigresha is not considered to be a Dova Hamiskaving, an act in which there is intent, and therefore one can provide the leniency in this case using the principle of Sofik Psigresha from the Taz and the Mishavura.
I have a question here from Shimon from Far Rockaway. He says his wife has been in the hospital off and on for the last month with some disease, and for Shalom, Shimon, to your wife, and he wants to know hospital doors. Getting in and out of the hospital is always problematic. Do you have any suggestion?
Hospital doors are monitored based on stepping on a pad, motion detectors. There is no heter to step on a motion on the pad to automatically trigger the opening of the doors. What I would suggest to Shimon is that he should wait for a new Yehudi to step on the pad to open the door, and he should follow the Enu Yehudi. He will be resetting the timer, but that does not involve a violation of Shabbos, and therefore he should gain entry using that method.
Okay, here's another question. This is from Chaim from Flatbush. It's a little bit off point, but maybe he said another hospital question. He said, what about using the elevators in hospitals? Is there any way to, if your wife is on the high floor on a hospital, is there any way to use the elevator if you don't want to climb 22 flights?
There's a machlokas aposkim about the using elevators. Mokum sorech, one could be matir. However, one should be careful not to enter the elevator after the elevator's doors have already started to close, because then triggering the electric eye, and it would represent a kavana le'isser. When the doors are open, then Malcolm Sorach, he would be permitted to step into the elevator.
Sir Abdaniel, since you wear a number of hats, you're also, besides being Rosh Yeshiva of Arachayim, you're also the Chancellor of Turo, and I want to maybe take a liberty to go off topic for a minute. I knew your father, Zichron Livracha, well, and I wanted to ask you that there's a Rambam in Hilchos Deis, and it's in Perek Hei, Halacha Yud Aleph, where it would seem that the Rambam, or rather your father, echoed the Rambam's opinion almost to a point. And let me read the Rambam to the audience. The Rambam writes like this: Derech Balei Deya, it's the norm or the actions of the intelligent, that a person sheyikfalei adam malachas haparnasa hamafarneses ayse tchila v'acharkach yikne bayis dira v'acharkach yiseisha, first learn a parnasa, then buy a home, and then afterwards get married. Shenemar miha isha shenata kerem v'lechilei asher bana bayis chadash v'lechinchay asher eras isha v'lei lekacha. And here's the lashon of the Rambam, very strong lashon. Aval hatipshim, I'm not sure of an exact definition of atipshim, but clearly not complimentary. Maschilin lisa isha, first they get married. V'charkach im timtze yada yikne bayis, v'charkach b'seif yamav, yachser levakish umnis ayisparnis ben hatzadaka. And then the Rambam continues, v'chein hu oimer b'klolis, in the klolis, in the curses of the teichacha, isha te'aras, first you will marry, then you will build a house, then you will find a parnasa kerem tita, klaimer yu masecha hafuchim. And then he says that David HaMelech, who all his actions were according to God, says the chol drach of maskil av Hashem imay, followed this pattern. Wouldn't the ideology of your father be almost lockstep with this Rambam?
My father very often quoted the Gemara in Brachos in the beginning of the sixth parak. That discuss the machlokas between Yishmael and Shimon bar Yochai about how one should couple Limud HaTorah with his responsibilities to provide for his mishpacha. And my father believes very strongly that Elu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim v'chayim. He did not preach one approach, but he had respect for the range that is represented by both Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. There are Jews that followed Rabbi Yishmael's approach, and as you know, Rabbi David, my father, gave them the opportunities to pursue that approach. And then there are Yidden who follow the opinion of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. And my father was equally respectful of that approach as well. And as David, you are certainly aware, the Kesef Mishnah comments that we are living in a time of Eslas Osla Hashem, that Limra Torah needs Chizik. So my father, as a founder and president of Torah College, established Kolulim, Bati Midrashim, to give people the avenue to pursue Limud HaTorah in the most intense and committed manner. But those who wish to follow what the Rambam outlined, my father also wanted to support them as well.
Reb Daniel, how would this Rambam coincide with the Rambam at the end of Shemitah V'Yovel, where the Rambam says, Loi shevet Levi bolvad ala kol ish fi ish mikol baya ola mashenad varuchay vevinu midei al havdol amid lefnei Hashem, the Rambam, which clearly provides great accolades for shevet Levi. How would these two Rambams be in sync?
I think the key to reconciling those Rambams is based on Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah, where he describes the one who wears the Keser HaTorah. And there the Rambam says that the one who zocher to wear the Keser HaTorah is mistapik muot. He doesn't have dreams of accumulating wealth. He doesn't have dreams of living a lifestyle that demands much. But rather, it simply owes a malacha k'dei chayov. And if one takes that approach, then I don't think that there is any real tension between the Rambam in Hilchos Shemitah V'Yovel and the Rambam in Hilchos Deis. It really depends on the priorities and the balance in one's life. If one puts the emphasis on one's spiritual development and relegates the Olam HaGashmi to secondary importance, then I think that the reconciliation of the two Rambams is quite evident.
Well, thank you, Rav Daniel Landa, Rosh Yeshiva Baruch Haim. It's been a pleasure to have you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, Rav David.
I'd like to conclude this with a thought. This week was the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. There were approximately 100 of the liberated survivors still there who came to this memorial. And the youngest was 83. Most were in their 90s. Which means this celebration, which happens every 10 years, this possibly may be the last one, because next time the youngest would be in their 90s. So it's there may be a few stragglers. I mean, I wish them all well. So it's worth commemorating. And there's a question that many people struggle with. Are those who survived Auschwitz, I'm sorry, those who were killed during World War II by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, are they called Kedai Shemanat? Now, there's two parts to this. One is metaphorical, just for the title, are they called Kedai Shem? But additionally, there is a halachic question that according to the Shalah that the Pesachei Tshuva brings, somebody who is going to be Neregal Kedai Shem actually recites a bracha. So if they have a din of Kedoshim, they would recite this bracha before they were killed. Whereas if, on the other hand, they were not, there would be no obligation. Now, Rabbi Ushri, who wrote the Shalos HaTshuvos Mimamakim responsa from the concentration camps in Volume 2, brings a very gripping story. And he brings in Shail of Dalad, his fourth responsa, he speaks about the Kovna ghetto, where 30,000 Jews were crowded into, And they lived in a multitude of, you know, these little dwellings, one on top of the other. And he said it was the black day was A to the Chodesh Mar Cheshvin in 1942. He says when they took all the Nazis came and they announced that all the inhabitants of the ghetto, without any exception, had to come to Democratic Place, which was the plaza in the center of the ghetto, for a lineup to be examined by the Germans to decide, in effect, who would be called to be killed and who were the few that would be left for work camps. And he said the terror gripped everybody in the ghetto because all the inhabitants had to bring the elders, whom almost certainly would be sent to death, as well as the children, which would be as well. And he said to reinforce it, the Nazis said that whoever doesn't come, the homes would be searched and they would be shot immediately on sight. The ghetto was emptied of all its inhabitants and everybody came to the square. People brought their small children in carriages. Older people were supported by their younger children. He said it was a day and it was snowing and raining, almost as if the heavens were crying. He said he was approached by a Jew by the name of Eliyahu. And Eliyahu asked him the following question. He said, do we, who will die today, should we recite the blessing brought by the Shelah, Baruch Atah Hashem, HaMekadesh Shmo Barabim, to sanctify God's name for, before our death or not? And this Jew advised him as well. He said he had heard that Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, who was Rosh Yeshiva of Baranovich, before, when he was taken out to be killed, he had made this blessing as well. So based upon that, Rabbi Ushri listened, and he said, based upon this, and he received testimony from somebody else that the Chafetz Chaim had commanded this to be done as well, and based upon this, he said, yes, they would have they would be allowed to make this blessing. Now the question is, this has been questioned since then, because the Rambam, both in the Yad HaChazaka and in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, when he brings the mitzvah of Enikdashti B'soch B'nei Yisrael, he says, this is a commandment given to us, that we are supposed to be Mefarsim HaAmuna. He says, and even if somebody, if an oppressor comes to us with might, and he has the ability to kill us, and he says, bow down to an idol, or worships an idol in some other way, he says, you have to say, no, I will not worship. Rather, give yourself over to death before committing, before transgressing this prohibition. And he said, and in that way, you are sanctifying God's name. So the Rambam is saying that the sanctification is, with this that you were given a choice to do God's will or to violate it, that's a sanctification of God's will. But the Nazis did not give anybody choices. They killed men, women, and children regardless of whether they were willing to convert, regardless of whether they were willing to bow down or commit any type of prohibition. So based upon this narrow reading of the Rambam, it would be very difficult to say that they were Kedoshim. So I've looked in all the commentators, the Achrayim, the Rishayim, and nobody finds a Makayr for this Rabbi Elchanan's Psak. So I was thinking we could maybe homiletically look for it a little bit in this week's Parsha. The Rashi brings that the Yidin were had the schus of being saved because of two mitzvahs. It says they at that point they had basically integrated into Egyptian society and they had lost all visages of what they should look like. He says, but they got two mitzvahs. It says, "Ve'ever alayich ve'erech misbeiseses b'damayich v'aymerlach b'damayich hayi." He said they had two mitzvahs that allowed them, that gave them the schus to be saved. One was dam milah, the blood of circumcision, and one was dam karban pesach, the blood of the karban pesach. And these two elements, these two mitzvahs, allowed them to be nigel, to survive. So the Maral, Rabbi Luria, a great 17th century commentator, says, what is the relationship? Why were these the first two mitzvahs and the mitzvahs that were given to Klal Yisrael as a way of liberation? What is common about these two mitzvahs? Like, there are 613 commandments. It could have been shechita. It could have been any one of the other of the karbanos. It could have been tefillin. It could have been talis. Like, why did he pick Dan Pesach and Dan Milah? So the Maral says there's something unique about these two mitzvahs. He says, Dan Milah, right? He says there's a concept of an eved and an oved. Dan Milah, circumcision, is done to a child before he has any choice in it whatsoever. It's done unknowingly, unwittingly, not at his, without his knowledge. But Dan Milah, in effect, is the stamp of the owner. It's the seal of the owner. It's his imprint. Every slave owner has his imprint. They used to brand them. He says, Dam Mila was the branding that God branded Al Brischa Shechasamta Bivsareinu. That made us Avadim, Avdei Hashem. Karban Pesach, on the other hand, we say Maha Avoda Zos Lachem refers to, Avoda refers to the service. It's the first mitzvah, and that's something that we have actually chosen. So he says there's a concept of Eved, and there's a concept of Oved, who you are and what you do. Now, very often, who we are and what we do don't match. I know people who, at heart, if you ask them, they would consider themselves religious and pious and really believe. But when it comes to their actions, you know, between belief and act, between a spoon and mouth, often there's spillage. And on the other hand, you have people who are diametrically opposed. They don't really believe much. But maybe for family pressures, social pressures, cultural pressures, they act totally in a way that would be synonymous with somebody who did believe. So we have actions, we have deeds, and we have who are you. And often they don't. So there's Eved and there's Oved. So the question is, what is the real Jew? Is it what we do or is it who we are? And it's interesting. I've seen it both ways. I was in Israel when my children were in school there, and I invited a very famous American financier to eat with us the Shabbos meal. And he's an avowed atheist. He's said so many times in public. It's not something that I'm not telling tales out of school. Well, we were sitting around the table and we sang. It was Friday night. We sang and we danced. And at the end of the meal, I looked around the table. There were exactly 9 boys. My son had brought 8 friends or 7 friends with him. And this gentleman made the 10th person. But he was an avowed atheist. So I looked at him and I said, you know, I would love to make a minion here, a quorum, so that we can bench. But unfortunately, since he's an atheist, I didn't know what to do. So I told him a story. I said, you know, in Russia years ago, there was a paritz. There was a big nobleman, or a Russian nobleman, who had a Jewish fellow on his property who owned the kretschma. He owned the little inn who used to sell wine and liquor. And that's how this little Jew earned his living. Well, one day, a galach moved into town. It was quite anti-Semitic. And he tells this landowner, he says, listen, you can't have a Jew on your property selling wine. It goes against our canon. You must have him convert. So this landowner goes to the Jew and he says, listen, you know, I really can't have you on the property anymore. It's just, you know, you got to convert if you want to keep your parnasa, if you want to keep your living. So this guy goes home and he looks at his wife and he says, listen, Razel, you know, I have to convert. And if I don't convert, I'm going to lose my inn. So she looks at him. She says, listen, Yassel, you don't have a choice, so convert. Okay, so he came to the next day back to the landowner. He said, it's fine, I converted. Well, as would happen, a few months later, the galach dies. So this paritz is all happy. He goes running back to the little yidala and he says, listen, I have good news for you. You can go back to being Jewish. So the guy runs home, and he tells his wife, he says, Razel, good news, we could go back to being Jewish. So his wife looks at him, and she says, Yassel, it's a week before Pesach. Couldn't you tell me this news in a week from now so that I don't have to go through all the cleaning and everything? So I told this fellow who I was sitting with, this lender, this big financier, I said to him, listen, I know you're an atheist. Could you maybe stop being an atheist for 10 minutes? We could make you part of the quorum. And afterwards, you could go back to being an atheist. So this guy exploded. And he says, what are you saying? That right now I can't be of a quorum? Do you know how much of my life I've dedicated to causes and to, you know, to education? He threw a tantrum. So I looked at him and I thought to myself, you know, even though maybe he's not, he doesn't act every way, he does not shema Torah mitzvahs, he doesn't put on tefillin, etc. But look at the core, he certainly believes, and when you touch that, you see how upset he gets. So you have Eved and you have Oved. So the question is, which one defines the Jew more? I mean, do we need both? Do you need both? Can you be a Jew with just one of them? So it's interesting. Reb Chaim Volozhin, the Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin, used to say, he said, who's a thief? He used to say, who's a scholar? Somebody who knows how to study or somebody who actually studies? He ran a school. This was a very important question for him. And to which he would respond, well, who's a thief? Somebody who steals or somebody who knows how to steal? So he clearly felt that the definition of who you are is act, is not belief. It's not quintessential what you identify with, what your soul is, what your essence is, who you believe, to which party you ascribe, but it's purely about actions. But I'm not sure everybody agrees with this. There's two opinions in the Gemara in Gittin. If somebody has a slave, this is in the days of slavery, an Eved Kenani, and he frees him. So the question is, and he frees him means, he says, he's mafgirim, he says, I have no more ownership over your rights. Does he still need to get a get shichur, something that spiritually he is now a free man? So Shmuel says, you do not have ownership of him, in other words, he does not have to, his acts are not those of us, he does not have to serve you anymore, he becomes free. What is he saying? He's saying basically deeds identify who you are. The definition of an Eved is somebody who acts like an Eved. Somebody who is, in theory, an Eved, he has the mitzvahs of an Eved, that does not identify you as an Eved. So he's saying it's all based upon actions. But Reb Yochanan argues, and what does Reb Yochanan say? Hamafkir avdei yatzal l'cheres, but tzarech get shechar. That is, what does that mean? That you may, on one hand, feel that you are, you don't have the deeds of an Eved anymore, but since in spirit and mitzvahs you are still a slave, we still see you as an Eved, because it's not, you're not purely defined by your actions, but you're also defined by who you are, by who you believe, by what your spirit is, what your soul is, and before you get to get shechar, you're still an Eved. So, look at it in this case. Let me tell you a story. Let me share with you a story. I heard this from Moshe Shapiro, from one of his students. He said that in the Yeshiva Chevron, when he was growing up, they used to make plays. And one year there was a play. And the play was that somebody who had died during the Holocaust, who was irreligious, went up to heaven. And what happens to this soul when he arrives in heaven? So the play was, this soul was covered in a white sheet, and there was a table there, and a voice with some type of a partition with a voice, the spirit on high speaking from the other side of the voice. And this is how the play went. He came up, and they said, oh, a martyr, welcome. We just have a few questions before you let you in. Did you keep kosher? So this guy said, no. He said, Shabbos? No. Tefillin? No. So the voice said, so then how are you, what makes you a Yid? What makes you Jewish? So this soul thought for a minute and it said, well, Hitler thought I was Jewish. So it caused a commotion. In heaven, there was this big commotion back and forth. And they said, we have to discuss it. And they, back and forth, he could hear voices arguing. And finally, there was a silence. And at the end of the silence, there came a ruling. There was a patch on the table, and there was a ruling. Halacha ke Hitler. probably the most astonishing psak I've ever heard in my life. What was the point? He considered him Jewish, so he must be. He must be so Eved trumps over Oved. You were sealed this way. You're a mole. All Yisrael b'cheskes mehulim, right? You're a mole. How do we paskin? Hamafkir av the yatzel lecheiras. We paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. Tzarech get shechar. Regardless of your actions, you are considered an Eved. And that's how, in this play, they paskin. Halacha kehitler. You were killed, regardless of whether you were religious or irreligious. So you were killed because you are an Eved. So then, you must be. It's Eved that must rule. Now there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Gittin, that has a very interesting, tells an interesting story. The Gemara says when the first Beis HaMikdash was Nechrav, so the Gemara says that there was an Isha im Shiva Baneha. The Gemara says there was a woman who had seven sons, and the Kesar wanted them to convert to Zoroastrian, which was the religion then, and he brought in the oldest son, and he said, you must convert and bow down or I will kill you. So the son said, Shema Yisrael, and he said, I won't, so he was executed. They brought in the second son, and he said, I want you to convert. He said, no, and he executed him. The third son, the fourth son, seven sons in a row, each one was killed. And the mother, who was watching, then says, the Gemara says, went up to the roof and jumped off the roof. So Gemara says, this is, the Gemara says, on this case, Nehrugin Alecha. The Gemara says, these are the people. Alecha Rugin Kalayim. Alecha Ragnu Kalayim. For you we die all day. The Gemara says, this refers to the story of this woman. And the Gemara says, no. Another Mandiyamar says, no. It refers to Mila. Mila? Why is Mila Alecha Ragnu Kalayim? That doesn't make any sense. Rashi says, because occasionally somebody dies. Like, what does that have to do? Like, how does that make it Alecha Ragnu Kalayim? But according to this Maral, we have an answer. What is Mila? Mila defines who you are, what you are. When you have defined yourself as an Eved, and particularly a Jew, put a target on his back, that, the fact that you are an Eved, that is a kiyum of Alecha Ragnu Kalayim. Hitler killed people not because he asked them to convert, but because they had a bris mila, because they were in essence of who they were. So that's what the machloek is here in the Gemara, is the two days in the Gemara. The first Mandiyama says, what is the definition of somebody, v'nikdashti b'seich b'nei Yisrael, somebody who is because they've been asked to convert? It's their actions, it's the oved. And the next Mandiyama, the Gemara says, no, it has nothing to do with oved. It's mila. You didn't do anything. It happened to you before you were a bardas, before you were cognizant. But the fact that you are a mohol and you have become a target, that makes Alecha Haragnu Kalayim. So according to the Maral and the Gemara in Gittin, we now have a makor for Rabbi Elchanan, and I think it's the first source that I've seen anywhere to say that those who were killed in the Holocaust, even without choice, but by the very fact for what they believed in and who they came from, that gives them a din of Kedoshim, and that is why they were able to make the bracha. Now, what is this? How do we paskin? Well, again, we paskin like Shmuel, like Rabbi Yochanan, who says Tzarech get shechar. Now, this week, last week, we also learned the story, the parsha of Tefillin. There are two Tefillins. There's Tefillin Shel Yad, and there's Tefillin Shel Reish. Tefillin Shel Yad has a verb in it, Lahaniach Tefillin. Tefillin Shel Reish doesn't have a verb, Al Mitzvah Tefillin. And why is that? Because Tefillin Shel Yad is all about, your yad is your zraya netuya, is what you do action with. It's how you lead your life. All your oved is through your arm. It's what you do and how you do it. That's a verb. Tefillin shel Rosh, on the other hand, is lahaniach, is eved. It's what I believe in, where I come from, how I identify myself, what is my quintessence, what is inside the inner beings of my soul that are not related to action. There's eved and there's oved. Now here's interesting. The Shagas Aryeh asks the question, mi she'ein lo yad, somebody does not have a yad, is he still mechuyev in tefillin shel Rosh? What does that mean? In this metaphor, if somebody is not an Oved, he does not have a Yad, but he still believes, does that make him? Is he still a Jew? Is he still an Eved? And how does the Shagas Aryeh say? Even somebody who does not have a Yad is still Mechuyev B'Tfilin Shel Rosh. We say that Tfilin Shel Yad and Tfilin Shel Rosh are not Ma'akfin Zu'ezu. Either way, you can believe and you're a Jew, or you can do when you're a Jew. Clearly the optimum is to be both. But either one makes you a kadosh. Either one makes you a genuine member of the faith and a genuine person. Now that, to many people, gives them a sense of solace, because while we all strive to put on tefillin shel yad and shel rosh, some of us are more shayach to shel rosh, some of us are more shayach to shel yad. And let me finish with a story. Eloy Wiesel said this story. He said when he was in the Holocaust, he was in a barrack that was solely for children. And he said he used to visit the adult barrack sometimes. And he said there was a frightening thing. He said one day there was somebody whose entire family had been slaughtered. And he got up in the barrack and he said, I can't understand this. He says, I want to call Kaviyachal to it entire. I want to call God to trial. He says, I've done everything that was requested of me, but I haven't, look what's happened to my family. So he says they had a trial back and forth. They put judges up there, you know, learned scholars, and they would debate it. And everybody in the barrack, it was late at night, was listening in fascination. And there was those who were arguing for Kaviyachal, and those who were saying no, and it was back and forth and back and forth. And they rested the case, and everybody in the barrack voted, and they said that this gentleman was right, who had lost his family, and God hadn't fulfilled his promises. And then Eloy Wiesel said, and afterwards, everybody got up, and they said, the man is right, Kaviyachal was wrong, and now it's time to daven Ma'ariv. So they remained Eved, even though there was at that point, it was just Eved. So we look forward to seeing you next week. We will have Meir Hertz and Yaakov Horowitz discussing Chinuch. Thank you very much, and a gutavach to all of you.
Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines. Some of the most important and controversial breaking issues of the day. Available at your local Jewish booksellers and at Amazon.com. Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines.